Today's show is brought to you in part by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 75,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals.
For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/feastoffun.
Burlesque may not have done well in theaters on its opening weekend, but this delightful romp through the world of a fantasy burlesque theater is a hit with gay men and drag queens everywhere. The film, directed and written by openly gay stunt coordinator Steve Anton, was made for a gay audience, and on that level, it delivers.
Comparisons between burlesque and Paul Verhoeven's camp catastrophe hit film, Showgirls, are inevitable. But while Showgirls is a roller coaster of decadent madness, burlesque is a merry-go-round, and you're stuck on the pony that doesn't go up or down. Pleasant, but not thrilling.
Sure, the music is fun, but the film really feels like a long-playing Christina Aguilera music video, with Cher making a reluctant special appearance. Still, we highly recommend it.
Listen as we talk about burlesque, and we're joined by Wayne Betson, founder of Truth Wins Out, which keeps a close eye on the haters like the ex-gay Exodus International, whose new plan is to go after middle school children and pair them up with mentors who may have been sexual predators. What could go wrong?
Wayne gives us an update on George Carry My Luggage Reekers, Dr. Laura's so-called new talk show, the future of anti-gay iPhone apps, and what was the top anti-gay news story of the year.
Plus, Gagaflage, how to use a Lady Gaga CD to steal top government secrets.
Lady Gaga and Kim Kardashian will die for AIDS.
And surely you can't be serious. Comedic legend Leslie Nielsen passed away from pneumonia. He was 84.
Don't call me Shirley. Call me Fausto Fernos.
And I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun. Today's show is brought to you by generous support of fabulous listeners like you.
We really can't do the show without your support, so please visit our website, feastoffun.com, and make a donation. Buy a t-shirt.
Your financial support makes all the difference. Thank you. Ooh, and I thought Thanksgiving was the only turkey I was going to get to savor this week.
Are you talking burlesque? Are you calling it a turkey? I thought of it more...
It was
more,
a delicious, mouth-watering turkey.
I thought it was more like cotton candy.
Yes, and like cotton candy, eating it for 15 minutes is fun. For a whole hour, it becomes kind of tiresome.
Oh, you loved it.
I loved every single minute of burlesque, I admit it. Mm-hmm. I really wanted this film to be a sequel to Showgirls.
It was not.
And they went out of their way to make sure to separate it from Showgirls. I felt, because, you know, Showgirls is one of the most successful two DVD movies ever made. Yeah. Sort of like neck and neck there with the Rocky Horror Picture Show. Gay
really?
Film. Yeah. Uh-huh. Rocky Horror Picture Show in its DVD sales, from what I understand, and this is just off the top of my head, and I may be wrong on this, is 20th Century Fox. Mm-hmm. It's its best film for them, and Showgirls is the number one all-time selling DVD
at over 100 million.
Yeah, so you know, this film, it's natural to want to make comparisons to Cabaret and to Showgirls, but I felt like it's a animal of its own, and yet shares a lot of things in common with Showgirls, which is tacky, you know, celebrities and showgirl numbers.
Well, the thing is, though, too, they really set up Christina Aguilera to be an ingenue, and it would have been nice just to kind of, like, not know her backstory if she had just popped up and maybe found that disclosure that she was a nice girl later on. But they portray her as a nice girl from the farms of Iowa very early on.
And, so they're like, she's honest, and she cares about people, and, you know, she will only steal when it's to feed hungry children and shit like that, you know?
She's like Robin Hood.
And I'm like, you know, I want to see Christina Aguilera in a pool recreating the Nomi Malone scene from Showgirls, where she's floundering like a fish.
But we do really appreciate what burlesque is, and I really enjoyed it, and it was fun to watch it. I wish I had seen it like on opening night with a bunch of people, because there was people, I love it when people shout back at the screen, because there's people in the audience going, that's so stupid. And then there's a scene where Christina Aguilera is,
Aguilera, she's Latina,
is trying out for Cher. And so Cher's like, okay, you can do a number. What number is it going to be? And then Cher screams out, Wagon wheel Watusi.
Do the wagon wheel Watusi.
Not do it. She just screams it.
I think she goes like screams the name of the sound guy and says like, "Hey Larry, wagon wheel Watusi."
No,
I think that's how it goes.
No, she goes, "What do you want me to do? Wagon wheel Watusi."
It's so bizarre.
And so she did that, and it was like, I laughed, and I said, "Wagon wheel Watusi," and everybody in the audience cracked up.
That is the phrase of the year.
Mm-hmm. Wagon wheel Watusi.
Which is an actual song from the film, Baby, the Rain Must Fall. Mm-hmm. And that was from the 1960s. And so, you know, this is the nice thing about burlesque is that you have sort of these classic hit songs. Mm-hmm. They had Madonna's Ray of Light.
Oh, yeah, was in there.
And certainly Marilyn Monroe's classic defining song, Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend, remixed for the new generation. But I felt, you know, in these kind of films, it can be really dangerous when they do a lot of quick edits or they remix such classic songs to the point they become annoying. And I didn't feel like, as Nomi Malone would have said about Versace, it didn't suck. The music didn't suck.
Well, the thing about the way...
Wait, the music didn't suck. Uh-huh.
No, the music didn't suck. And of course, there's going to be like, you are going to see throughout the nation, there's going to be burlesque drag queen shows. Mm-hmm. And they're going to go through the whole thing. Or
the
they
whole
might
damn soundtrack.
Because personally, I think the first one where Something's Got a Hold on Me, you're going to see lots of drag queens doing that.
I love that song.
They love to be able to... and wave their diva hand up and down.
It has those Christina Aguilera classic... You know, money in the bank slides, as they call them. Hey, I gotta call my bank to find out if there's a balance for me to pay the rent. And actually, in real life, Christina Aguilera I'm waiting for the bus. Excuse me, can I have a lemon with my diet cola? Something like that.
I wonder if she walks through life just kind of saying that to people and going,
you know,
around.
Actually, in order for this is a little side note, if you're actually wanting to do slides for real, what you do is you sit on the piano and you bang out the notes. And then you sing along to those notes. And
is that
then
how
you.
Music works.
Well, you got to sing on the notes, Christina. Look, Christina, I know you're trying to do those slides, but you're just giving Mama Cher a big headache. Could you just keep it quiet a little bit? I'm old. I'm just old and I'm tired and I don't want you to be screaming in my ear all the time.
I had to get Botox in my ears so I wouldn't hear your slides.
You know, I was wondering, in the scenes that Cher and Christina Aguilera are singing, did Cher have cotton stuffed in her ears? I want to know.
Listen, Christina's a fantastic singer, and I think this is a young diva and an old diva together, and I bet they're probably very friendly.
I like that she was kind of like, what is that song? I'm not dead yet. What is it?
You haven't seen the last episode. So these are the big drag numbers.
Cher's like turning that. She should have sang it to Christina Aguilera, like, "My seat ain't cold yet, bitch. So do not think that I'm passing the torch. We are sharing the stage."
Right. We have not seen. You haven't seen the last of me. So the first song, definitely you're going to see drag queens doing Something's Got a Hold on Me. And then Cher's opening number is Welcome to Burlesque. Do you want to do a little bit of that?
Welcome to Burlesque. This is the movie. Fall into the gap. But this is the kind of song that I, because it has the title of the movie in it, and of course it's, you know, a word that describes the genre as well, is it almost feels like a, you know, 4-minute ad for the movie.
Inside the movie.
And it's like, you are watching the film Burlesque starring me and Christina Aguilera, but she's not important. I'm important. I'm Cher. But, you know, I have to say, we miss you, Cher. Welcome back, baby. We miss you so much. We miss you when you were on Will and Grace and you've sort of been fallen into that Las Vegas netherworld where you disappear.
And so I think also, but so there's another
you want to talk about the songs.
Oh, yeah, we got to talk about the songs because these are the drag queen songs that you're going to be hearing all over. So if you go see a drag show in the next couple of weeks or probably the next couple of years, these are ones. So also, But I'm a Good Girl, which has Christina Aguilera going around on the stage, you know, putting her ass out there and saying, I'm a good girl and I only want a good man and da-da-da. But otherwise, she wants all the fancy things. And then also Cher.
Which one did she sing with all the pearls on?
I think that's But I'm a Good Girl.
Because we went to see a drag show here in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And there was this wonderful drag queen. I don't her
Francesca
name
Francesca something or other.
Francesca something, and
she's gonna transition in January.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Oh, well, shout out, more power to you, Frenchie. And and she, you know, can do some serious damage with a hot glue gun and a string of pearls. And she made herself a dress, and she came out singing, "But I'm a Good Girl," lip syncing. Mm-hmm. And that dress started falling apart, and we started seeing a lot more of that good girl than we were expecting to. And on the stage, everybody was comparing it to Showgirls, where they threw the pearls onto the stage to sabotage the other performers.
And when I went out there, I went and I slipped on them, and I tripped.
And you almost died.
I almost broke my neck.
We want to interrupt the show for just a little second to remind the listeners that today's program would not be possible without your support. Go to our website, feastoffun.com, and hit the share and save button and share it with someone you love on your social networking, on your Twitter, because a podcast is a terrible thing to waste.
And today's podcast is also brought to you in part by Audible.com, the leading provider in spoken word entertainment. Audible has over 75,000 titles to choose from to be downloaded and played back anywhere, just like Feast of Fun. Log on to audiblepodcast.com/feastoffun to get a free audiobook download of your choice when you sign up today. And I've actually found a book on there about burlesque. It's
about
called
burlesque, about my favorite topic right now.
Ultimate Burlesque Erotic Stories Collection 1. And so the UK's top erotic writers talk about how burlesque has made them sexy. And so one of the stories is The Duck, the Mouse, and the Bride. A charity burlesque performance led to a sexual encounter in the park that would change her life. And also to another one, Calippa, the Stripper. Will they get busted by the League of Decency? You know, it's all sorts of crazy short erotic stories, which probably are pretty much like Tracy Tyler's stories.
Mark, so, when did all these plus-size girls get casted out of the film Burlesque? They were all skinny girls. Where were they?
I don't know. But again, go to audiblepodcast.com/feastoffun for your free audiobook today. Because that's my joke. It's like, what's the difference between a stripper and a burlesque artist? 50 pounds. And all the burlesque artists always laugh when I tell them that. And they're like, it's so true.
It's so true. Well, because, you know, the legacy of burlesque is that you don't have to have a stripper's body to participate.
No. Well, and the thing is, too, is like...
And I feel like film really sort of overlooked that critical aspect of the genre.
It was very sizist in that sense. Because burlesque actually comes from a Spanish word for burla, which is like to joke.
Burla. To laugh at. Laugh at your fat body.
I read the Wikipedia. So it's like, it's about sexuality, but it's also about being very fun, too. You know, and having a good time with it. And finally, I guess the big song, too, is like, Show Me How You Burlesque is going to be a big number. And that's the one where all the drag queens are going to come out on the stage and I'll have a little get together at the end.
But, you know, look, we like your movie. We love you, Cher. We love you, Christina. You don't need to sell us the movie while we're watching the movie. That's one thing, a little feedback. You know, I think... I want to talk about Alan Cumings, trying to, you know, people want to compare him to that guy from Cabaret, but...
His scenes all got cut.
His scenes were kind of awkward, you know, and it was like, you know, it just felt like too much like, ooh, I have a banana. Ooh, you're giving me a blowjob. Well, but it's really, you're eating a banana.
Well, let's talk about underutilized. I mean, he plays the cashier guy in the thing and he comes in like, she's like, $20. That's his scene. And then you don't see him again for another hour. And you're like, wait a second. I love Alan Cumings. I think he's a fantastic actor. Where's his stuff? I guess they're probably holding on to it for the DVD extras.
I think Cher got pissed at him. Probably because he stepped on her tail, and she had him edited out of the film as much
take
as possible.
Take him out of the film.
You take him out of a film. I don't care what he played, Nightcrawler in the X-Men. I didn't even see that movie. It doesn't make any sense.
When did you get a good Cher impersonation? When did that happen?
I've had it inside me all along. I just saved it for today's show because it, you know, I have a tool in my arsenal kit.
Wagon Wheel Watusi.
It's a wonderful film. Let's talk about the new hunk who's replacing Jake Gyllenhaal, Cam Gigande.
Gigandet? Is that how you say it?
It's French. It's spelled Gigandet, but I think it's pronounced Gigande.
He probably says debt.
Debt.
The American pronunciation.
The pronunciation. So he's the hunk. He's the romantic interest with Christina Aguilera. And yes, they show more of his naked body than any of the chicks in this film.
Oh yeah, it's true.
They want gay men to see this movie. Yes. I'm waiting for Cher's publicist to get back in touch with us to actually get Cher or Christina Aguilera on this podcast to explain the movie.
Her publicist died for the movie.
What?
Their publicist was...
Oh, my God, that's right.
She was leaving the premiere, and she got gunned down in her car.
Ronnie Chasen, this is what, according to Wikipedia...
It's true. She was a powerhouse.
Respected Hollywood publicist left the premiere of the film Burlesque to supposedly drive home to her house in Westwood, L.A. Around 12:28 a.m., Chasen was driving past a Beverly Hills hotel when multiple shots were fired into her Mercedes-Benz. Chasen crashed her car into a light pole as a resident ran out to help her. Police arrived at the scene and found her badly wounded by gunshots. She was rushed to the hospital and was later pronounced dead. The curse of Burlesque. So it was after the film, probably an angry fan, didn't like the movie.
It's hard to say. We just don't know. We don't know anything.
It may be one of those crazy strippers in the movie.
Cam, how hot is he?
Cam Jiande.
He knows Israeli martial arts.
Yeah, let me look at here. What is it? You look at his Wikipedia entry.
His IMDb.
Hold on a second. I'll tell you what it is. It's called Krav Maga, a self-defense system developed by the Israeli army. So it's like a combination. It's like a Jewish judo or judo.
It's jujitsu.
Or taekwondo.
Or, yeah, kung ju. I think we got them all in there.
Or no, well, you have to have like the word Hebrew or something.
Hebrew keto.
I think jujitsu works.
Jujitsu.
Yeah. So, man,
he's got a tight body. Whew. You know what it is? He looks like he could be musician Tom Goss's brother. Taller, better shape brother.
He looks just like you, but with a better body. No, but I love his proportions. He's beautiful. And then they have him completely naked without tan lines, holding a box. This is called product placement of Famous Amos chocolate chip cookies where his junk should be.
And like he ever eats chocolate chip cookies, please.
And he, you know, they got the extra family size, the Costco brand Famous Amos cookies to hide all the stuff. And I have to say to the audience, if I were Christina Aguilera in that movie, I would have eaten the whole box.
All of it.
All of it.
I got to say, though, it bugs me. His eyes are too small. I'm just going to put it out there. And that's it.
He looks like a sexy monkey you want to just have monkey loving with. He's adorable. So you might remember him from The O.C. and from a bunch of other stuff. But he's been in Twilight. That's how you remember
him. I don't know what it was in Twilight.
He played one of those vampires that had an aversion to clothing.
It's the werewolves that get naked.
But no, in the first Twilight movie that most gay men didn't get to see because they didn't give a damn about it back then, and still don't. But is that they had all the vampires like shirtless in the first film, I think.
I don't think so.
The second film they kind of introduced the werewolves, and that's where they have them all shirtless then.
Okay, if you
say
so.
Because I looked at photos on Google image search of Cam Jiande. Me and my hand, you know, were. Having
so
a
two thumbs up for the burlesque.
You know, I have to say, if you hate Christina Aguilera and you hate whiny films about singing divas and all this stuff, if you hate showgirls but you love sexy naked men, go see it anyways, because Cam Jiande is worth the price of the ticket. He's worth of anything.
Listen, it's good, campy fun, and it's not a great film, but it's something, you know, you watch and you're like...
I loved it. I thought it was great. I would totally want to see it again. If someone wants to buy it for me on DVD when it comes out next week.
Because it was rumored it was almost straight to DVD.
It was almost straight to DVD, and Cher said, hold on a second, wasn't I in Moonstruck? Didn't I get an Oscar for that role? I think I did, didn't I? You're not putting Cher in a straight to DVD film. You're going to release this in the films, and you're going to market it to the gays. And my friend Stanley Tucci is going to share the scenes with me.
He's already played this part in The Devil Wears Prada anyway.
Yeah, let me tell you, Stanley Tucci and Cher together were electrifying the, you know, love seeing Cher and a gay, older seasoned gay man sharing the stage, even though in real life Stanley Tucci is heterosexual identified.
Oh.
But Alan Cummings is gay identified. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Cam Jiande, I have to say, he looked really, really gay in this movie.
Absolutely.
So, you
without
know,
a doubt.
I'm not outing him. I'm not saying anything. I'm just saying that, it you know, when in the movie they're saying, oh, you're so gay. You're so gay. You know, it's like, I'm like, well, he does kind of come right? across as.
I mean, he's wearing all that eyeliner.
You know, it was kind of like when Jim Carrey went on David Letterman mm-hmm. to talk about I Love You, Philip Morris last week. Mm-hmm. And he was talking to David about how when a straight man plays a gay character in a film, he has to think about the way gay men look at somebody, the way a man would look at another man sexually. Mm-hmm. You know, it wouldn't be just a straight on gaze. It's like
it's all in the eyes.
It's all in the eyes.
It's a window to the soul.
It's a window to the soul. And with Cam Jiande, I mean, maybe it's Christina Aguilera's, like, it was enough to pop any guy's boner off, you know, to deflate the air in his Zeppelin.
Well, they says that, like, in real life, I guess, you know, she's going through a divorce, or she just got divorced and has, you know, said that she likes to play with girls. And there's rumors that she goes up to girls in West Hollywood bars, or gets her bodyguard to go find girls to go play with.
You're going to hang out with Christina Aguilera and you're going to have lesbian monkey love and sex.
Some of the dialogue, let's talk about the dialogue. Some of the dialogue is like as witty as Cher, like somebody saying something to Cher and she goes, You think? You think? And you're like, come on. You can't give somebody a better line than you think.
There was excellent actors in the film. I felt that the script was like Showgirls, sloppily written. The pacing, one thing that separates this film from Showgirls is Showgirls, one of the genius aspects of the film is that the pacing goes really fast. You don't feel like you're wasting any time. In Burlesque, you feel it's almost like a, you know, like right now in this podcast, you feel like it's rambling on too long on something, and it's revisiting the same point that was made, and maybe even has the same song with the same title, mm-hmm. with the same lyrics, with the same melody, with the same chicks and the same makeup and the same costume and the same sexually ambiguous dances. And you just go, is this film over yet? You know, but you know, it rewards you to watching it because the scenes between Cher and Stanley Tucci are so much fun and they never end. And it's, you know, that wonderful banter between a gay man and his diva is just, it's satisfying to see, even though Stanley Tucci does fulfill that magic homo stereotype that allows a woman to find her soul, to get her groove back. Right.
The magic Negro, as Spike Lee called it, you know, the magic person that comes in and teach you how to get your groove back, how to find your soul and your true purpose in life, is kind of, I think, being overtaken by, you know, the magic homo.
Because we see that in other films where there's the gay best friend who's like, you know,
you have to remember who you are, girl, and da-da-da-da. Yeah, but I think that's a good thing, and I think it's moving forward.
Well, you know what, how it moves forward in this film is that we actually get to see Stanley Tucci's character of the stage manager actually sexually fulfilled and
take
his own advice, and he heals himself with his own, he is his own inner diva, his own magic homo.
Which is very important.
And I think so. So I give, you know, definitely four stars, four Feats of Fun stars, or a thumbs up, or you know,
it's almost there. The one thing though about the scenes between Cher and Stanley Tucci, though, they were very charming, they were very nice, they weren't outrageously brilliant. That's the thing about this movie. It's not a brilliant film.
But, you know, I'm just tired of paying money to go see films and seeing these actors who have no chemistry, no ability to relate to another human being in the screen, and to see two seasoned acting veterans, Stanley Tucci and Cher, share anything in, you know, any dialogue is magical, and they could have been reading the ingredients of a box of crackers and still make it work. So anything, you know.
Star power, honey.
Cher, shame on you for not being in films all this time. And we, you know, I want to see Cher in more movies.
She's waiting for her face to settle in. She looks great.
She looks fantastic. But listen, that's no excuse. Give me more movies.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Moving on.
Well, let's move on.
Let's talk about, everybody's talking about this. WikiLeaks.
So WikiLeaks.
So you may been hiding underneath, you know, a rock. So there's new documents over how many million documents from the CIA and the Pentagon, most of them sort of like, it sounds a lot like gossip columnists talking about celebrities, only it's politicians talking about other heads of states. So they're like, that President Sarkozy is so boring, he just makes me want to kill myself every time I'm around him. And it's like, you know, President Obama saying this. So it's like extremely embarrassing. And Secretary Hillary Clinton is speaking out and saying that this is putting lots of people's lives in danger, and this is really a terrible thing to do, and it's and putting, you know, the balance of the free world in peril.
Right, because they're putting all these documents out there. But what I really love about it is like how the guy got it out, and we've come up with a new term.
Okay, first talk about how he got it out first.
Okay, so this is a quote from him. It's U.S. soldier Bradley Manning, and so what he would do is he would bring CDRs in on music. Oh, I'll read the quote. He goes, quote, I would come in with music on a CD-ROM or a CDRW labeled with something like Lady Gaga, erase the music, then write a compressed split file. No one suspected a thing. I listened and lip-synced to Lady Gaga's Telephone while exfiltrating possibly the largest data spillage in American history. So he hid it under like Lady Gaga's metal dress.
So he hid something in plain sight by disguising it as a loud, flamboyant, colorful manner. So people were coining a new word here on Feast of Fun. Gaga-flage.
Like camouflage, but Gaga.
Yeah, well, like Lady Gaga, you know, and in this case, inspired by how the most current significant WikiLeaks happened, to hide it in plain sight by drawing as much attention to it. Imagine this computer technician working at the Pentagon, which I would imagine is a pretty macho, non-Gaga-friendly atmosphere. And he's sitting at his desk, copying documents that would severely embarrass and compromise, you know, all
national
sorts of things.
National security.
And he's copying it onto a Lady Gaga CD that's not even like a Lady Gaga. It's just a CD with the words, with a Sharpie.
It's pirated music, first of all.
First. And so he's there and he's like lip-syncing Bad Romance. What was the song he was lip-syncing?
Telephone by
Telephone.
Beyonce. Don't you love it? He said, Telephone. What you got in my telephone?
And that joke is being stolen by the writers of the Colbert Report now.
And that joke that I just said is stolen by me of the Colbert Report, who steals things from Reddit and other social networks.
And what about Lady Gaga's? Lady Gaga, Kim Kardashian, Ryan Seacrest, and Alicia Keys have all quit Twitter for World AIDS Day, which is coming up December 1st, folks.
Yes.
So they're trying to put a nail in the coffin of HIV and AIDS, and also maybe the internet. Are they trying to say no more internet because the internet's costing us a career?
The RIAA is declaring war on the internet. But I think, because they're saying that the internet, they're saying that the internet's been killing the music industry, but I think in reality, it's sort of like the Republicans. They're trying to kill the internet because they don't want any other musicians to replace. I mean, it's like, you know, maybe they have something to it. It's like once you become an established pop star, you don't want anybody. You think Lady Gaga goes around telling people about Katy Perry? Hell no. She's like, who's that? I kissed a what? And she liked it?
Yeah.
Hell no.
I just love it. It's like we had a funeral for him, and now they're posing dead. Like
just for Lady Gaga, yes. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, you know, Kim Kardashian won't stay off of Twitter. Long enough. You know, but it's a really great idea. You know, if we could convince you guys to do stuff like that, we would do it too. Mm-hmm. But we know we're begging for you.
Yeah, bet that podcast award, podcastawards.com, People's Choice, and Best GLBT Podcast. Please vote for us in both categories.
Or we will really die and stop Twittering and podcasting and all this stuff. We'll do the opposite.
We'll fade away.
Yeah. So, you know, if you listen to the show and you enjoy what we do, vote for us. If you don't care one way or another, then don't take any action.
And sadly,
what?
Leslie Nielsen died.
Oh my
god. Actor and comedian. And I'm just worried who's
grandfather of American comedy, best known for his Naked Gun films and for putting up with Elvis's widow, Priscilla Presley.
I'm just worried who's going to do the Nielsen ratings now that he's dead. Are they still not important anymore?
I don't think they have anything to do with that.
Oh, really? Oh.
You know, Nelson, it's interesting you should make that joke because Leslie Nielsen mm-hmm. made a career of telling bad jokes in a deadpan manner that made audiences roar with laughter.
I know. So when I put that on Facebook and somebody was like, "Boo, you can't be making fun of him. He just," I'm like, "He's a comedian and that's the kind of joke he would really appreciate."
And he made bad jokes.
Are you saying my joke was bad?
Yes, it was tacky.
You laughed.
I thought it was funny because you delivered it like Leslie Nielsen would have. Yeah. And so I went to YouTube and I was trying to find somebody from NPR wrote on their blog about Leslie Nielsen's performance on Saturday Night Live when he opened the show, and he sort of deconstructed his comedy and the way why he you know does what he does and how he does it. And I can't seem to find that, but I found a lot of clips of Leslie Nielsen from his films, and I didn't realize, because I'm a big Simpsons fan, that so much of what Homer Simpson does mm-hmm. as a cartoon is really like borrowed from the Naked Gun films.
Or that it's that same style of humor.
Oh my God, there's literally scene by scene, physical comedy by physical comedy, like Homer Simpson at the racetrack, where he's like bumping into people or hitting them in the groin with his head, the same way Leslie Nielsen did, sure. you know?
Well, it's like he had that kind of humor where it's like, I'm saying these things because I'm just not aware of my circumstances and what's happening around me. And it's, you know, it's brilliant comedy sometimes, and other times you're just like, oh God.
But, you know, in a lot of ways, the writers of The Simpsons definitely, you know, owe a lot to Leslie Nielsen and his comedy style and his characters and the way he transformed a dramatic mm-hmm. acting career. He was in The Poseidon Adventure.
That was a comedy though, wasn't it?
Well, it wasn't intended as a comedy, but maybe that was kind of like the last serious, one of the last serious films that you ever made, and that sort of like got him in the direction of doing comedy.
He wasn't a bad looking fellow in the 50s and 60s
no,
either.
No, he was handsome. Mm-hmm. He always would go on talk shows, and this is kind of something else that we share in common with Leslie Nielsen is that, you know, sometimes with a guest, we like to do the same thing over and over with the guest to see how the guest reacts mm-hmm. to. He would go on talk shows with a fart sound device and not tell the host or the people that were interviewing him that, you know, he always does this as a tradition. Mm-hmm. And so if you go on YouTube and you search just any interview that he's done on David Letterman, not Jay Leno because it didn't exist at the time, but on Arsenio Hall.
I'm sure he's been on Jay Leno or The Tonight Show.
The Tonight Show mm-hmm. on Australian morning television. Anywhere he went, he would carry that fart machine and the button and he'd just go...
And they're like, I don't smell anything.
But he would just like... And he would just like pretend like nothing happened. And I was like, that's really brilliant. Because he was really nervous during interviews. Like he kept rubbing his hands and being like awkward about talking about his films, and when he actually tried to describe his humor and his comedy to the audience, like it wouldn't go off, like right. the audience was just kind of like, huh, what? So but then he would fart and the audience would roar and laugh.
People love a good fart joke.
Farts, what can we can't live with them, can't live without them.
So are you a bigger fan of Airplane or of the Naked Gun movies?
You know, I like them. I wish that these movies were being, well, they're now going to be aired a lot on cable television now that Leslie's
done.
They
just showed one of them the other day.
So, you know, the films are best to scan fast to get the little nuggets, mm-hmm. like seeing Barbara Bush beaten, you know, have the bathroom door slammed in her face is awesome. Or having, you know, O.J. Simpson getting beaten alive, like, I mean, within an inch of his life by Leslie Nielsen in the movie. You know, I don't want to say that's where he got the idea from either, but it's nice. It might be. I heard how we believe we're laughing at...
What? O.J. Simpson?
Yeah, well, at, you know, marital abuse and murder.
I remember watching O.J. Simpson in those movies and being, oh, it's O.J. Simpson. Oh,
he's so fun. Know. He's so nice.
It's so great that he's got a career after, you know, football, you know, because, you know, when
he had a career because of Leslie Nielsen.
Because when I was a kid growing up, I mean, O.J., he was a star. And that's why I think people were so ready to forgive him. But,
You know, so the moral of the story, if you're a murderer, try to be famous first.
So people are more indulgent.
It's gaga-flage. Hiding in plain sight. Mm-hmm. Because you're so famous, you're so loud, you're so, you know, there out there that no one was suspected.
They don't pick up the little details.
They don't pick up the details. They're just so blown away by your celebrity.
Mm-hmm.
Madonna could have been the number one serial killer in America and we wouldn't know it.
Oh my God, please, I hope that's true.
That's gotta be like a new, like one of those novels, you know, Michael Crichton.
Michael Crichton.
Crichton. Crichton.
Is he alive though? I feel like
or
he
one
died.
Of those right, you know, one of those people that write those books that you buy at airports.
Mm-hmm.
Like the diva
serial killer
did it.
The diva did it.
You know?
That's a great murder. That's a great mystery.
And it's like it's sort of
well,
like
I became famous, yeah. So I'd have money to build my dungeon and chamber of horrors.
It's like a Saw the sequel starring Paris Hilton. I don't want a good diva to be the murderer. I want someone like Paris Hilton. Paris Hilton would be a good like serial killer.
Mm-hmm.
Or someone like Kim Kardashian. Do you know that she's got just dead bodies in her basement?
She's a baby snatcher.
Yeah.
She eats them.
She sums up read in a Chinese facelift magazine that injecting baby placenta into your face would help cure wrinkles or something. What is up with China? And it's like they're finally banned Chinese and Japanese hunting of hammerhead sharks.
Oh, they did?
Fine, this week.
So I can't get my hammerhead
shark pills
anymore?
And I guess like Asian people feel like, you know, if it's extinct and it's rare and it's a violent animal or a scary animal, that eating some of it will give you vitality.
It's like homeopathy. A little bit of it will give you what you need.
Well, then with that, it's like it's
that shark cartilage. What about that? Can I still eat that?
I guess the thing about it is that when they're hunting for tuna, they always catch sharks in the nets.
So they
try to recycle the sharks by selling those products. But this is actually
now
like
throw them back.
Actual intent of hunting hammerhead sharks, which are going extinct.
I want to eat one of those sharks because there's sharks that, you know, they mate and then inside of them they have the female carries the live sharks
babies
inside of her. But those sharks, as they grow inside of her, they fight each other and kill each other so that they in the end, she only gives birth to one. And so they'll like have up to like 18.
So it's like a fight club in her womb.
It's a fight club in her womb. Yeah,
only
exactly.
12 sharks enter. One shark comes out. The burlesque Thunderdome. Oh, Tina Turner's in my movie. I love her.
Thunderdome.
Would have been great to have Tina Turner just pop in and say, Hey, Cher, do you need to borrow some sugar?
I know.
Or poor something
well,
like that.
Hopefully she can save her club. The thing about it, though, too, is really it's a preposterous setup. There's no way that you could have a full band there, have all those girls there, and that a club that size make any money at all.
And let's point out also that in real life, there is nothing even close to that. There's no
exist.
Burlesque club on the Sunset Strip in L.A.
Well,
in that area.
If you go to like Vegas, it's like, you know, you'd have to have a huge theater to support a show like that.
That's why I feel, let's just declare this, that Showgirls is the more realistic film of the two.
Absolutely. It's a far superior film.
Far superior film, but still go see Burlesque.
But
what?
Burlesque is a good like a training wheels to see Showgirls. Like Burlesque is something you could show like your teenage daughter, your kids, whatever, and then later on as they become adults they could see Showgirls.
That's a good idea, way of looking at it.
So
or
it's the training wheels,
or even better yet, you can rent Valley of the Dolls, Beyond the Valley of the Dolls, Showgirls, and Burlesque, and just pretend that it's the same character going through time. Like the time traveler's wife. Mm-hmm. Only it's a stripper with a heart of gold.
Listen, let's talk to Wayne Besson. He's been waiting on the line for us here.
Wayne Besson is an American gay rights advocate. He is a former spokesman for the Human Rights Campaign and founder of Truth Wins Out, a ex-gay watchdog group fighting anti-gay lies and the ex-gay myth. Let's talk to Wayne.
Wayne.
Hello.
Hello, Wayne. Can you hear me?
I can.
Hi, it's Cher.
Well, that's exactly what I was expecting.
Did you see her new movie, Wayne?
I didn't see the movie yet. I want to see the movie.
You have to go see it. It'll make all these depressing things just melt away. Like back in 1972, I was dancing with Tina Turner and Ike Beater, and I felt so bad for her.
We've had a good time seeing Burlesque, but we wanted to talk to you about this year. 2010 seemed to be like the year about the children.
Everybody's, it's El Nino year.
Or as they say in Spanish, El Nino year. And this is the year that the GLBT community is really focused on young gay people and their problems. But also, too, you've discovered the ex-gay movement is also focusing on young people as well.
Well, because a good idea is a good idea, right, Wayne?
Yeah, I think Exodus is riding the wave here. And they see they're very opportunistic, and they have read the news reports about the young people committing suicide, and they have to take responsibility for the fact they're a cause of it. They're not the solution, they're the problem. Unfortunately, the opposite has happened, and the, Exodus has announced that their number one priority in 2011 is to get kids to attend their ex-gay seminars. And that's incredibly troubling. And what's really scary is they're going after them young. They're going after them as young as 11 years old, middle school kids. And they're even being very slick about it. They're trying to get an iPhone app, and they already have a slick CD for a CD-ROM and a DVD, and they're using a lot of social networking and Facebook, and they're really, I think, tapped into ways to confuse young people and take advantage of the most vulnerable members of our community. And then that disgusts me, and my organization, Truth Wins Out, is going to do everything in our power to stop them and expose them for the frauds that they are.
Well, what is on the CD that they're sending to middle school kids?
A CD-ROM? That's so 80s.
But some kids will still use it, you know.
Most people don't even have a computer that runs a CD-ROM.
You can't put a CD into it?
Well, you can, but it's like you need the software to run like Windows, you know, 92 or something like that.
Well, anyway, but what's on the CD that for anti-gay kids? Like, what are they telling kids on the CD?
They're telling them that they're sinful, that they're going to hell, that what they call spiritual warfare. Exodus believes that homosexuality in many cases is demonic, and they'll fight the demon of homosexuality. And this does a lot of harm to young people. As you can imagine, it's quite devastating to find out you're infested with a demon and that these people are going to take it out of you. And you know, it's incredibly damaging. But that's exactly the kind of nonsense they're selling.
Well, how are they going to deliver this to kids? Are they getting into schools? Are people bringing them into schools? Are they finding them at church groups?
Well, they're finding them at church groups primarily. They're using and working through the Southern Baptist Convention is the most frequent way they're getting young people, because Exodus hasn't had a good year. They've increasingly been rejected by mainstream society. In fact, they're pulling away, in some respects, from mainstream society because they get laughed at for their pray away the gay efforts. So they've really concentrated on abusing, as far as I'm concerned, young people within the churches, particularly through the Southern Baptist Convention.
So, Wayne, the Exodus is actually sending poorly screened members to become mentors to young middle school children who are struggling with their sexual identity? Or, I mean, because I was reading on your blog, truthwinsout.org, that some of these guys have been arrested for pedophilia or are convicted sex offenders in the past?
Well, what they do is they believe all sin is sin. So a pedophile is considered just as sinful as somebody who's gay. And so what they do is they've done in the past is they just lumped every, quote, sin together, and they put young people who were trying to be cured in the same classrooms to be cured with pedophiles who want the magic cure. So Exodus has no, since they don't really, like normal thinking, educated people, they don't see a distinction between, you know, pedophiles and homosexuals, and so they'll just lump everyone in the same classroom together, which puts the young person at great danger. And you have to also remember that this Exodus group, they don't really have any standards. Nobody's qualified, or very few of them are qualified. And all you have to do to become an Exodus leader in many respects is just say that you prayed away the gay, no matter how shady or checkered your background's been. So they have no compunction about putting young people in with these very unqualified people.
It sounds like a recipe for disaster, putting pedophiles with people, young people that are questioning their sexuality. It's like a...
Some cases, these are pedophiles. Other cases, in more cases, they just don't know what the hell they're doing.
That's like ordering a DVD on how to become a street smart ninja. It's not going to end well. Wayne, I'm having problems with the phone connection here.
Are you really? Can you hear me now?
Yeah, we're just getting a lot of like static and weird.
What kind of phone are you on?
An iPhone.
Okay.
You are?
That'll do it.
Let's talk about these the Manhattan Declaration anti-gay iPhone app that was recently pulled by the iTunes store only after so many people sounded the alarm and raised concerns. There was a quiz that you took and it said, do you believe in marriage equality? And if you said yes, then you're like, you are wrong. But here, sign this little declaration of hate.
Yeah, this organization is primarily run by Robert George, who was a professor at Princeton, incredibly anti-gay. He's also on the board of the Family Research Council, which is a certified Southern Poverty Law Center hate group, and he's almost every anti-gay proposition you see. Robert George is very quietly behind the scenes behind it, and so they put out this app, trying to be, I guess, cool and market it to younger people, more cosmopolitan people. And fortunately, people spoke up about it and let Apple know that this Manhattan Declaration was not some benign study of the past, of the Declaration of Independence, but a very anti-gay organization. And, of course, Access International is trying to get an app out on the iPhone, the ex-gay organization, and we're going to see what we can do to make sure it never sees the light of day, because they shouldn't be recruiting youth with such technology. It's funny, these groups, they don't even believe in evolution, and they don't believe in science, yet they have no compunction about using the modern tools of modern technology created by liberal society to bash liberal society.
Well, I mean, what do you say? I agree with you that these iPhone apps shouldn't be available in the first place, but at the same time, people might argue that these iPhone apps are a free speech issue and that Apple has no business rejecting an iPhone application based on its political views.
Well, there is no free speech there. Apple offers product. It's a company. It can make a decision on what its company represents, and they have to decide who their customer base is. From living in Manhattan and living in Chelsea and lived in Burlington, Vermont, college town, and before that Washington, I can tell you who their customer base is. It's people who live in Washington and Burlington and in New York, in Chelsea, in the Village, and in Boys Town, in Chicago, and that's, if you walk into the cafes at these places, that's where everybody's using Mac. We're an all Mac company, and I don't think Robert George and the Manhattan Declaration, X International, are their customers. So, as a private company, they can decide.
So, what are you saying is that basically it's only a short matter of time before Windows Zune Store has an anti-gay Zune player app? If such a thing, Windows 7.
Do they have that kind of app store for Microsoft?
Are they going to just go from that to Android, or are they going to go to other like cell phone platforms? I mean, you know, is this really like? I mean, seriously speaking, like, why don't they just go to another platform?
You're absolutely right. They will do whatever they can, and they never give up. That's one thing about our opponents is they're very committed to what they're doing, very strong beliefs, and they will. Play hopscotch until they find, the place that does pick up their garbage. But they are private companies and they have to make decisions. And if Apple rejecting the Manhattan Declaration is a violation of free speech, then the Family Research Council not accepting a Truth Wins Out application would be a violation of free speech. Of course, it's not because we're all private entities.
Mm-hmm. Well, Wayne, let me ask you this about the ex-gay movement. As you know, homosexuality used to be regarded as a disease. It was taken off the books as a disease in 1973. And within the, I think it was the past year or two, the American Psychiatric Association came out and said, you don't need to treat people for being gay. It's not any kind of disorder. It actually can do irreparable harm to some people. Which basically, so if somebody's trying to repair somebody to become not gay anymore, and they're going against this, can't they sue them or something for malpractice?
We are looking for cases where malpractice has occurred, and we will give people legal advice or direct them in the, into a place where they will get legal advice. It's extremely difficult to sue, though, for a variety of reasons. First of all, the patient usually gets to choose what kind of therapy they want, and that the client, that which makes it very difficult to actually sue. The other thing is statute of limitations. I mean, there's so many, there's a lot of obstacles to this. For example, if it happened too long ago, we've seen this again with the Catholic priests and the statute of limitations. Some of them got away with molestation and child rape. But, the same applies to the ex-gay organizations. The other thing, you have to show that enough permanent damage has occurred, and of course, it's sort of a balance where enough damage has had to have had occurred, but the person can't be completely, a crackpot in a way at this point as a result of the damage where they can't reasonably represent themselves. So it's kind of a weird situation. But I believe there will be a major lawsuit at some point against these groups because it is quack therapy and they are doing a lot of harm, and we will get that case.
Well, because I would imagine,
if someone's listening and somebody's listening and they've been harmed, mm-hmm. contact us.
Okay.
And you may have a case.
Well, because I wonder, because we've interviewed people on the show before that have gone through like the Mormon, the Church of Latter-day Saints conversion therapy, and those people had like electrodes attached to their bodies. They were given stuff to make them vomit. I mean, it's basically, they were tortured.
It's quack science. And don't they have a case to sue?
They very well may have a case to sue. And if they believe that they have been hurt, and of course you've been hooked up to electrodes, you have, they should contact an attorney. Again, it might be statute of limitations because much of this has happened a while ago in terms of the shock therapy. We don't see quite as much of that today. It's an anomaly if we see it. Not to say it doesn't occur, but it's not very common. But yeah, people should pursue their legal options. In fact, if you go to Truth Wins Out's website or look it up on the web, we have a booklet called Ex-Gay in the Law that will give you your legal options to see if you have a case, and let you contact attorneys at Lambda Legal who can help you decide if there might be some merit to your case.
Have any victims or families of bullies or bullying successfully sued their abusers, their families, or the schools?
Yeah, there have been cases. There have been cases like that. I believe off the top of my head there was one in Wisconsin that they won a while back and collected damages. I believe the Southern Poverty Law Center or another organization might be looking at a lawsuit in Minnesota over the recent suicides.
And there's certainly been kids that have sued their school districts for not protecting them.
Yes, yes. So that has happened.
You know, speaking of the Southern Poverty Law Institute, they recently named like 18 anti-gay hate groups, and I was surprised that three of them are in the Chicagoland area, which is where we're based out of, is Chicago. I'm like, why are there so many here?
Because there's nothing better to do in the suburbs.
Is that what it is? Or do they just breed on each other? I don't know.
I mean, you think, yeah. Maybe that's why, because we interview and are friends with people who live in the suburbs of Chicago, and a lot of them say that's where a lot of sexual compulsive behavior comes from, because it is kind of like people are bored, when there's little happening culturally in your neighborhood, you start thinking of like things to, the idle hands or idle body genitals, idle dicks are the devil's playground. But I mean, if you've actually followed these groups, why do you think like they breed in certain neighborhoods or in cities more than others? And certainly like in Chicago suburbs, why here?
Well, because they have the idolized family, and not in a normal, healthy way. Like, my parents have been together for 41 years, And, you know, they don't talk about family values, but these unhealthy people, they run off to these suburbs to create this Ozzie and Harriet perfect family, and they have these big mega churches in many of these areas, and it attracts them. This is where they hope to heal themselves from their demons, and they try to take themselves away from temptation, only to find that they still have their sick, perverted selves with nothing to do and idle time in their hands, and then they try to fill that time with creating anti-gay organizations or simply getting behaving in a naughty fashion that's going to get them in trouble.
Where did George Reekers live? He sounds like somebody who lived in the suburbs of Florida.
Yeah, he lived, but he spent most of his life in Columbia, South Carolina, as University of South Carolina professor. So the Florida move was more recent. And I'm a native of Miami and Fort Lauderdale, and I think they've got more strip joints, gay strip joints, in 7-Eleven. So it's not a good place for a closet case like George Reekers to be.
Now, for people who don't remember, he's the one who got caught with his hands in the cookie jar because he hired a male escort from an online website to carry his bags, so he says, to go on vacation. And the guy actually came forward and said, no, it was not just to carry his bags, that he had sex in his mind.
He gave him the long stroke, which means he masturbated him.
Yeah, he gave him a long stroke massage. And he met this young man on rentboy.com, and he claimed, of course, that he was just needed somebody to, you know, lift his luggage. Because that's what we all do. You know, every time we have a heavy bag, we get a rent boy.
I wonder if rent boy's website, like subscription or visits, went up because of that news story. And I'm wondering if rent boy helped to leak the story, you know, as a business practice.
Actually, I talked to the owners now, the manager recently, and no, that didn't happen. They got a lot. They did have an increase of web hits, obviously, but it didn't right away increase business.
Because I feel like, you know, I'm all for the legalization of escorts in order to make it safer and to regulate it, you know, the way they do in Nevada.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you know, it's like, what's up with that movement, and, you know, like in these evangelical groups?
Well, unfortunately, America's too immature to deal with that kind of subject matter. I mean, we barely decided, only a few years ago, we weren't going to throw gay people in jail for having consensual sex. You know, we've always had a push and pull between the Puritans and progressives, and it goes back and forth. It's a giant, it's a big tug of war, and nobody's really won that battle yet. And I don't know if they ever will. That's just the way this country is. And that type of issue, it makes common sense to tax prostitution and get these violent pimps out of the trade. But unfortunately, again, our country isn't really ready to grapple with real issues. We have these grand ideals about the way things should be, and we have a big problem with looking at the way the world really is.
So 2010 is going to be known in gay rights in history books as an El Nino year, where the LGBT community turned its eyes to the situation and circumstances of youth and abuse, not just in terms of like bullying and peer bullying
or suicide,
but in terms of institutions, of churches, of community groups, and the abuse they place on children by propagating that there's multiple opinions and multiple ideas on gay rights and liberation. And recently, a study was published in the Boston Globe about bullying and its effects on the human brain. Do you want to hear this, Wayne? It's fascinating.
Oh, yeah.
So they said that the primary impact of bullying happens on the corpus callosum, the bridge between the hemispheres between the brain. So it's you know, for art students, it's what allows the right brain to communicate with the left brain, your analytical side with your creative side. But in an everyday physical reaction, it leads to a reduction of cortisol in girls and high levels of cortisol in boys, weakened immune systems, memory problems, and speech impediments. So maybe all those sick days that you took off of school as a gay teenager were because you were actually sick, and all that stuttering you had was because of the bullies.
And maybe the gay lisp is it from the speech impediment from...
The study goes as far to suggest that maybe the part of the reason that gay people speak the way they do is a physical reaction unconscious physical reaction to their the abuse that they receive from their environment. What do you?
Can you imagine?
Bam!
So it's affecting our brains.
So it's affecting us on a way, but it's like, you know, the study also says it's like, well, you know, gay people do manage to survive. So they're trying to say like, what impact does abuse and bullying, both from teachers, from peers, from institutions, have? They were also looking at brain scans and hormone levels of cortisol and stress hormones. And they said that a lot of this abuse from their peers was equal to emotional and physical abuse, almost equal to abuse from their parents. Mm-hmm. So if your father is like yelling at you or being an abusive father, it is just as horrible as having an abusive classmate.
Yeah, I believe that. I think what's going on is horrible. I remember being in high school, and there was a young man who was pretty effeminate, and he was picked on unmercifully, and he had to drop out of school. So how did it affect him? Well, he had to deal with the abuse that probably did affect his brain, as the study showed, and he also had his education cut short, which probably affects him perhaps to this day, because he doesn't make as much money unless he went back to school and got his degree. And of course, the scars that would last a lifetime from such abuse, and probably a lot of time on a shrink's couch. So the bottom line is, more people are coming to an understanding that this isn't just boys being boys. This is boys beating boys. Essentially, we have thousands and thousands of kids who are going to school and getting mugged every day. If the same thing that happened to them happened in schools or happening on the subway, the cops would run in with billy clubs and hit these and arrest these bullies. But because it happens in a schoolyard with religious fundamentalists as teachers and principals who think they're moral, this muggings are passed off as boys being boys. That's got to stop. And any teacher, any principal that allows this to go on is clearly unqualified and should be fired from their job immediately, with no pay, with no severance.
I think, though, too, is like we're calling these kids bullies, and really they're abusers. And
they're muggers. Mm-hmm. If you're going to school and punching somebody every day, you're mugging them. Let's call it for what it really is. And we excuse this, and it's got to stop. Too much damage has occurred. And our opponents, though, on some level love it, because they understand that coming out is what is allowed the LGBT movement to gain so much traction, move forward. And the only thing they've got left to keep people in the closet from this entire anti-gay charade collapsing is this physical violence, is this abuse, is this fear. That little voice in your head when you want to hold your partner's hand when you're outside and you have to look around for your safety, that voice that makes you so you can't really enjoy the moment because you have to look around and survey your surroundings, that little voice right there is what the only thing the religious right has left. That little voice in a young person's head when they walk into a classroom, they have to look around before they enter the bathroom because they might get mugged. That right there is the only thing the religious right has left. That's the fear that keeps everybody from coming out. That's the fear that keeps the anti-gay movement alive. And that's why, whether they admit it or not, they depend on violence to succeed. And the moment that goes away is the moment they lose and they go out of business.
But equally, I think it's also important for our movement to talk about this, about our own personal experiences, and to heal about it, because it's like, that's really where it gets some steam, and it continues with the steam, is having us sharing our stories and hearing about it.
Yeah, my friend Mitchell Gold from the organization Faith in America has an excellent book called Crisis, where a lot of people, some of them very well known in this community, go back into their childhood and talk about this abuse and talk about what they went through and how it affected them. And that right there is an excellent example of telling our stories. Mm-hmm. We try to do the same thing, Truth Wins Out, with our videos of survivors of ex-gay organizations, mm-hmm. and talk about the abuse they went through. And so I think there's a lot of that going on, and I think it's having an effect, a cumulative effect. And of course, it's been terrific. And now we've got Dan Savage, who did an incredible deed for our community with his It Gets Better campaign.
Even if Kim Kardashian started using it as a way to promote her new book. And Queen Latifah was like, I was abused too as a child. I had big titties, and my titties stood in the way of. I mean, seriously, like, you know, I guess there's no such thing as bad publicity when fighting for equality. But sometimes I feel like some of these celebrities should just keep their mouths shut. You know.
more than a few.
They're absolutely. But I think that people as a community, I think it's very healing, and it's almost become like an internet support group for people. Let me ask you, Wayne, as you look back on 2010, what's the big news item of this year for the ex-gay movement? What's the thing that pops into your mind is like, that's the story of the year for 2010 and ex-gay?
There's no doubt about it. Hands down, the George Reckers, who we talked about, who got caught with... that young man, he met on rentboy.com, was easily the biggest story. That dominated the news for an entire week. And George Reckers was not just any anti-gay figure. He was the guy who would go around to places like Arkansas and Florida and say we shouldn't adopt children. He was the, quote, expert. He was the one who wrote several books and was the brains behind the groups like the National Association for Research and Therapy, mm-hmm. homosexuality known as NARD.
Mm-hmm. NARD? It was called NARDS?
NARD.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and he was really their most powerful member because he was the one who had the most respect, the most degrees, and he had avoided all these years any kind of controversy. He was very hard to nail and expose. And it was very hard to nail, apparently, because he was nailing rent boys and behind closed doors. And when this unraveled, it really was an incredible embarrassment to mm-hmm. the ex-gays, and it showed that what a farce it was. And I'll go further than that. He was nailed right after this fake quack pediatric association, the American College of Pediatricians, which is like a fake pediatricians group for right-wingers. Mm-hmm. They just sent a letter urging every superintendent in America to reject homosexuality and to put these kids in ex-gay therapy. And George Reckers signed this, and he was the one behind mm-hmm. this. And so, you know, right after they had done this, he got caught. And so the main guy saying, hey, send your kids to ex-gay therapy, it works, showed quite the opposite, that he was a fraud.
Well, he also got the repercussions were pretty big too, because didn't they also in Florida they used his testimony for this anti-adoption for gay kids, and then also in California, so in the Prop 8 trial, some of his things
testimony
that, not his actual testimony, but his work was cited on the people that were supporting the anti-gay Prop 8.
Absolutely, and that's why it was by far the biggest story of the year, because it was more than just a gotcha moment. Mm-hmm. It was someone who the religious right relied on as their expert in so many cases, and he had done an enormous amount of damage to the LGBT community. And what he was really doing was just working out his personal demons on the public stage at the expense of many. Mm-hmm. He ought to be ashamed of himself.
Well, how does like these anti-gay, ex-gay groups, religious fundamentalists, reacted to George Reckers being, caught with his hands in the cookie jar?
He was one of the founders of the Family Research Council, and they almost denied the fact that he was a founder and said he hadn't been involved in a long time. He was a founder with James Dobson and Gary Bauer. So, I mean, that's how mm-hmm. involved he was. So that was just nonsense. And the other organizations were pretty silent on it or got rid of him. That group, NARTH, they had him resign from their board after he got caught. Mm. So he was trying to deny he did this, but yet he was, stepped down and disappeared. He has not really been heard from since, and I don't really blame him, because if that had happened to me, I'd probably go off to Siberia or somewhere too and build an igloo and hide.
Where did he go on vacation with this rent boy? Was
France,
wasn't
somewhere
it? Somewhere in Europe.
I would go just move there, I mean, it seems like he was happy there. Maybe he could find love on Rent Boy and then move with a guy,
Yeah,
that's I wish him a happy ending and not.
Well, I'm just glad, at his age, that he's having good orgasms.
Is he going to come out of the closet, though?
Well, apparently we heard he did get a few happy endings, but it had to be for an extra if he tipped well enough.
But I mean, has George Reckers made any statements since all this went down? Like, is he saying I'm coming out of the closet, or I'm staying in denial, or?
He's still staying in denial, and he threatened to sue everybody under the sun right after it happened, and then he didn't, and he just disappeared because he knew he really didn't have a case, and all that would do was put a gigantic spotlight on him and humiliate him and every organization he's involved with further. So, no, he's really been off the radar.
So do you think the organizations, like, paid him to go away?
No, I think that he's towards the age of an older gentleman. He's toward the end of his career, and I think he just figured that it was a good time to enjoy a little more time with his family and retirement.
But do you typically find, though, is it like these people that are in charge of these ex-gay movements, are they gay themselves and they just can't deal with it?
I believe almost every one of them is who's obsessed with homosexuality. I think there's not any other explanation, and these people just look, to be quite frank, they seem stereotypically gay.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there's no other reason why somebody would be so obsessed unless they secretly wanted to enter that arena. You know, I don't really care about, I don't like NASCAR, and so I don't really talk about it. I don't go to NASCAR events. I don't watch it on TV. But I do like basketball, and I'm always around basketball, and I play it, and I watch it because it's something I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the same parallels with people who are obsessed with homosexuality. If they really didn't care, no real straight person is going to give a damn.
Right.
And you know, anybody who's obsessed with anything is because they want to be in that arena. And I think we've seen too many examples of this to say otherwise. I mean, I think it's a psychological phenomenon.
They might have that brain damage from the gay bullying. You know, so maybe it's not just like the callow campus or whatever it's called.
It's a corpus callosum. Oh, you know, actually, I studied the brain chemistry and nerves and the way the abuse impacts your brain in high school. I studied this in college. Is that this thing called the myelin sheath, mm-hmm. which is how nerves work? Is this nice chemical coating on your nerves which allow the signals to cross back and forth. It's literally the conductor of electricity. The actual electricity is moving back mm-hmm. and forth. And when the stress happens to you, it breaks down your mind's ability to think cognitively, mm-hmm. to look at a picture of a dog and say, this is a dog, or to look a picture at Tom Cruise and say, this is a closeted gay man.
I think we need to get that Peter LaBarbera from Americans for the Truth about homosexuality to get in some kind of CAT scan. We need to study his brain because I'm sure he has brain damage.
Well, that's funny. It's funny you mentioned the CAT scan, though, because I spoke to an expert a couple years back who did the no-lie MRIs. And basically, when you lie, it's like a lie detector test, but when you lie, it lights different parts of your brain light up. And I challenged the ex-gay organizations, every last one of them. I said, take the no-lie MRI, we'll pay for it, and let's see if you're still attracted to them. Let's see if you've changed at all. Let's see if mm-hmm. you cheated on your wives.
I want that as a bumper sticker, Wayne. No lie, MRI.
And so what happened? Did they
all said no. They said
of course
all said
not.
No to the no lie MRI. Not a single one of these leaders of these organizations, these frauds, these phonies, mm-hmm. these complete, you know, charlatans.
Listen, you got to make it worth a while. Say, we will pay you $100,000 to take this MRI.
Well, no, if they pass it.
If they pass.
Yeah.
If you pass, you'll get $1 million.
Well, you don't want to pay them money just to take the test.
They're going
to
fail.
Well, no, I'm saying to pay them money if they can take the test and pass it.
Yeah. That's what we'll do.
Without lying.
We didn't have that kind of money. We don't have that kind of money here.
One of those gay billionaires.
We didn't have to pay for that. We did have a pay. We would pay for the top couple of their leaders to take this test.
I mean, what's David Geffen doing with his money anyways these days?
David, if you're listening to this, call me. We will fund these no-lie MRIs. But good, this is a perfect investment for you because none of them will take it, no matter how much you offer them, because mm-hmm. they're all full of shit.
Ellen should, if Ellen really wants to stop bullying and all this stuff, you know, if all these like celebrities really want to stop bullying, they would fund the no lie MRI campaign and pay these anti-gay people, make it a bet, you know, be like, if you're really sincere about what you believe in, mm-hmm. take an MRI scan, because then we'll also find out they've been past victims
of
abuse.
There actually is a test, though, that has been done. It was back in 1986. A man named Dr. Henry Adams at University of Georgia showed gay porn to his subjects. And the ones that were most homophobic were the ones most aroused by the gay porn. So it has been scientifically shown in one legitimate study that has backed what I've said and what we've been talking about.
But Wayne, also too, the ex-gay people, they don't say that they are no longer attracted to people of the same sex. They just say that they are now able to control it, that they don't work
changed.
On the impulses.
But that's changed because of the scandals. They were very much talking about miracles back before 1998, and after I photographed the guy in the gay bar, John Polk, and who was on the cover of Newsweek and the leader of Exodus and Focus on the Family's Love Went Out program, and a couple other of these frauds, and they had to start changing their language to the miracle cure to. They still lie and they still trick vulnerable people. This is how they do it. Instead of saying you can be cured, what they'll say is you can have freedom from homosexuality. God can cure you. Actually, I have a quote from Alan Chambers on our website right now saying God can cure you. And that's a way for them to avoid culpability in being charged on fraud. What they do, they say, well, we don't change you. Nobody can change you, but God can cure you. And, of course, when that doesn't happen, the person blames God for not helping them, and they become very angry, sometimes very bitter, and sometimes suicidal. It's a very destructive cycle that Exodus International and such groups foist on people.
Wayne, you hang out, you sometimes go covertly to some of these anti-gay groups and associations and conferences. You grow your facial hair, you wear a little plaid shirt and butch it up. And do you ever ask them, like, you know, do they offer a cure for hypocrisy from God?
No, I'd be too long of a line to take it, I think, but, these places.
But I mean, you actually go to them and they actually, like, some of them, like, actually know you.
Yeah, it's been very difficult to go undercover myself anymore. But I did send people to go undercover in St. Louis to Lou Engel from The Call. He had a big fundamentalist rally, very anti-gay figure, and we sent people into there who successfully went. And we also did something. We sent two people into a summer camp that was reported to be very anti-gay. The pose as teenagers in the summertime. Loaded with cameras to the hilt. And what we found, actually, was that they weren't as bad as our report had told us. And so, we wanted to corroborate this, and we
you were disappointed.
Found out that it was, well, it was good in one sense, that it wasn't bad. I mean, that kids would be okay there. That was good and bad because, we went in there and paid for two people to roast marshmallows.
Well, I hope they had a good time.
Well, I mean, so in a way, it's like there's light coming through the clouds of ignorance and hypocrisy then. Lot of these organizations that really do want to help people are starting to actually sincerely help people by providing them marshmallow roasting parties as opposed to, shock torture treatment and of physical abuse.
Well, that's actually interesting because the year before they did have a gay person in there who was 14 who had a tough time, and I think that might have helped them when our people went in there and they were much more sensitive, I think, and understood gay people and weren't very as judgmental as we had expected, and treated them with respect and dignity, and that was actually really interesting how that worked out. But again, it's never good to to fund marshmallow roasting and canoeing, but sometimes that's part of investigating. Sometimes you expose frauds, as we did earlier in the year with Arthur Goldberg, the head of the Jewish ex-gay group. We found that he was formerly a Wall Street con artist that sold billions of dollars and went to prison. And sometimes you send people into camp and to corroborate abuse, and you find quite the opposite. So that's part of investigating. But it's a big part of what we do, because we don't just sit there and report what other people are doing as news. We actually aim to break the news.
Mm-hmm. And I commend you for your work, Wayne. I mean, it's fantastic, and I'm glad that you are the watchdog of the ex-gay movement. And, you know, if there's anything you ever need from us, please let us know. We'd be more than happy to help.
And if you want to shoot some hoops, I got a court in the backyard.
Oh, I always love to shoot some hoops. It's harder as I get older, I'll tell you.
I got game, so you got to, you know.
Before we let you go, Wayne, I want to talk to you a little bit about Dr. Laura. So she just made an announcement that she's having a new show that's going to be on Sirius XM Radio because her other show got... She quit it because she started using the N-word. Because
her advertisers quit her.
Her advertisers
quit her. That's what really happened.
And so now she's saying that she's going to love the freedom of being on Sirius and that she doesn't have to worry about the advertisers and there won't be any censorship. So she's acting as though this is like a new thing. But she's had a show on Sirius since 2005. They just rebroadcast her old show.
Well, what a lot of people don't realize about Sirius Satellite Radio, it's kind of like you can just buy airtime on that service and you can have your own radio show just like a podcast. You know, it's a little more expensive, obviously. But anybody can, you know, with the deep pockets can actually do it. And so that's what she's been doing all along.
Yeah, well, that's going to be very interesting because now that she is unplugged, will she become unhinged? And we saw, and I'm afraid she will. I mean, I think she had to make nice with the gays after they
stopped Dr. Laura.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a terrific campaign, mm-hmm. and groundbreaking. And now she went after the blacks, mm-hmm. and you know, she lost her show over that. But now, without any rules, God knows what she's going to say. Well, it's going to be like she's going to. I'm afraid this woman's going to sound like a drunk, you know, Mel Gibson after a bottle of vodka.
That's absurd. The thing too about it though is she's acting as though this is this big new thing and that it's actually a step up for her. But in reality, it is a step down because she no longer her show was on Sirius before, so her audience is not getting bigger. It's actually contracting. Since it's only going to be on Sirius.
Like, who the hell would take advice for her? You have to be pretty desperate for someone to help you.
I think most people just call her up to fuck with her and to watch her freak out.
It's like, you know, scaring that crazy old religious lady mm-hmm. who lived across the street from you.
Yeah, they say, I'm poisoning your food and slip it under her door.
Yeah.
You know.
People who listen to the show know what we're talking about. But Wayne, it's a pleasure having you on the show. Always a pleasure. And thank you so much for all the work that you do. Again, the website is truthwinsout.org, right?
That's right.
And they can follow you there. You're on Twitter too.
On Twitter and Facebook and all those exciting websites.
And YouTube too.
And if anybody wants to like volunteer to like infiltrate an anti-gay organization and report back to you, how do they go about doing that?
You can contact me on our website or directly on my email, wbessen, B-E-S-E-N, at truthwinsout.org.
Because if anybody actually does that, I want them on the show. I think it'd be a lot of fun.
Well, it's great to be on. Absolutely love the show. Terrific, and it's an honor to be on.
So then I can count on your vote for the podcast awards coming up this next week, coming up Wednesday.
December 1st through the 15th, vote once every day, and you don't have to pray the gay away anymore.
No. For People's Choice and Best GLBT Podcast.
It's like the only gay-themed podcast 4 years in a row to be nominated for the top prize. Mm-hmm. No, and the only thing in Chicago ever nominated for anything.
The top prize.
Anything in the top prize. Even we've even beaten out the anti-disco sucks.
Steve Dahl.
he's so, you know, we've even beaten out Dr. Laura.
Forget the podcast. The presidential election's coming up in a couple of years. I mean, run in the primaries.
Oh, maybe we should.
I want people actually run for political office who actually want to be serving. Because I think a lot of people become politicians because they're bored or vain, you know,
like
and they don't
Palin.
Realize, like Sarah Palin. And it's like the reality is serving in a political office is about as exciting as working in the DMV with a bunch of pesky, annoying, whiny people.
And then you have to answer to the public.
It's like, you know, I really feel bad about President Barack Obama and all this stuff, but at the same time, stop reminding us that you lost a handful of seats in the House this past election. When he was, like, pardoning the turkey, he made some off-the-cuff comments about, it was like, well, isn't it good that, you know, the turkey's not being, you know, attacked like the Democratic Party? And I was like, stop comparing your party to a turkey.
You know? Jive turkey.
Oh, my God. I was just like, shut up. I was like, please don't say any more about the last election. Focus on the positive things. You know,
we just saw, talking about turkeys, we had moved to Vermont and saw our first wild turkeys yesterday.
Wow. Was it like a whole family?
It was a whole field of them. It was really cool.
Wow. They're good eating.
I don't think they are.
So why did you move to Vermont?
Well, we were in New York City and looking for a college town to run the organization out of. That was to cut down on costs and also a place for a lot of smart people who could take part in it. And that was near all the major cities. It had direct flights to like Chicago and New York and D.C. Mm-hmm. And Burlington, Vermont was that town. And it's gorgeous here. It's one of the prettiest places in the country.
It absolutely is.
And I really, you know, we just really enjoy it. It's terrific.
Well, awesome.
And enjoy all the maple syrup you can eat. Oh, you beat my joke.
Had some this morning.
Sure.
Send me some, Wayne.
It's good on bacon. Cook your bacon.
Oh, my God. So turkey bacon, free range, wild turkey bacon with Vermont maple syrup.
Happy holidays, Wayne.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
We'll see you in the new year. Bye-bye.
Bye. Wayne Besson lives now in Vermont.
Burlington, Vermont, college town.
You can visit him on his website, truthwinsout.org, follow him on Twitter.
He's one of the good guys. He's been fighting the good fight for a long time now.
And he's got game.
And he's got game.
Yeah, so if you know what I'm saying.
He's a handsome fellow.
Handsome fellow who can play basketball. If I played basketball with him, I'd be like, where do I throw the ball?
You don't even know how to dribble.
I'm really good with peach basketball.
What does that mean?
Well, originally basketball was a game that was played into peach baskets, and then somebody would climb up the ladder and pull the ball out and throw it back to the players. I'd be the person pulling the ball out of the peach basket.
Yes, Fausto, you would be. You'd be the one.
I'd be like, can I play? Can I? He's like, I'll do that.
Yeah. How do you really feel about being nominated for the podcast awards and
People's
Choice?
I feel wonderful, darling. It's inspiring. If we win the People's Choice Podcast Award for the top prize, Mark and I will dress up as Joan Crawford and Christina and reenact the scene from Mommy Dearest where Joan Crawford wins the Oscar.
Okay. How about...
We will reenact that.
You'll be
Christina.
No, I'll be Joan.
I have to be Joan.
I look more like Joan, don't I? I
am Joan Crawford because I can do the snobby aristocratic voice much better.
Well, I can too. Well, how about we do something from Baby Jane where you be... Yes. I'll be in the wheelchair and you be Betty Davis because you make a more crazy kind of drag queen.
No, I want to be Joan Crawford. You got to be Betty Davis. Yes, you have to be in the wheelchair, Blanche. You are great as a blonde.
So you're in the wheelchair.
No. Oh, yeah. I'd be Joan Crawford.
Okay.
I'd be so honored to win this award. I'm just happy to be nominated.
You're better at Cher, honey.
I'd be so happy to be nominated. We could do Cher and you could be Chaz.
We don't
wear anything.
I'll be.
Hey. Yeah,
I'll wear a suit. He always wears a suit.
He always wears a suit. I'll be Cher and be like, oh, Chaz, I'm just so glad we got nominated. Fausto and Mark got nominated for the People's Choice Podcast Awards.
So I want to remind you, too, you can vote every day, December 1st through the 15th, every 24-hour period.
Endorsed by Cher and Chaz.
You know what we got to come up with is one of those little programs that people can download that reminds them to vote every day. It goes on their calendar.
Is there such a thing?
Yeah, we did it before. We'll
post a link to that.
Okay.
You know, to remind you listeners to vote once a day. You know, and you can do it pretty much from any computer IP email address combination. So you know, all you have to go is go to Apple and buy more computers.
Have five computers, space them throughout the country,
and space them equally distance in different cities, and vote. And there you go.
Because you know what? If we really turn it out, we really can do it.
I want to be the first gay person to win the top prize.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
And the great thing about it, too, is if we win the top prize, we'll be out of the running next year. So next year, you won't have to vote.
And, you know, yeah, that's right. And for the haters out there, you can vote for us to get us out of the running altogether.
Yeah. And then we'll just, you know, we'll be that cork that gets popped off the bottle.
Maybe. Oh, that's a good.
We'll pop your cork, baby.
And, you know, I'll do this. If we win, mm-hmm. I'll make sure mm-hmm. we get the actual share on the show.
And I will dance the wagon wheel Watusi.
I will do anything. I'll get naked. I'll do naked burlesque. I was a little disappointed that Cher wasn't naked in burlesque. But
well, yeah. Well, what do you expect?
I was like, come on, mama.
Welcome to burlesque.
Welcome to burlesque. We're going to leave you with a little burlesque lovin', the song Wagon Wheel Watusi. It's available on two different albums. One is Striptease, The Walk on the Burlesque, and the other one is the soundtrack to the film Baby, the Rain Must Fall, composed and written by Elmer Bernstein, available on our website, feastoffun.com. It is a burlesque striptease classic song where you see all the fabulous ladies taking almost all their clothes off on stage.
I want to remind the listener, too, that we can't do the show without your support, so please visit feastoffun.com/iPhone and make a donation to our ongoing website development costs.
We can't do it without you. Cher needs new nose. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.